from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild, wild world, so keep it tuned right here. And tonight I have a special guest for you this hour. He's a reverend who lives here in Asheville, North Carolina, and he has met the extraterrestrials in person. This gentleman is a retired board-certified chaplain, worked as a professional hospital chaplain in both New York City and a mid-sized southern city. He is an ordained interfaith minister, as well as having a career as a professional actor, singer, and dancer in New York City on stage, TV, and film. And he now utilizes his chaplaincy skills as a diversity and inclusion officer for a major southern hospital. He's a longtime UFO experiencer, and he's lectured on this topic many times. In fact, you may have seen him on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens or Sci-Fi Channel's production of Abduction Diaries. I mean, his credentials just go on and on. His website is michaeljscarter.com, and that's where you can learn about his brand new book. It's called Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials and the Holy Bible. That's a combination of topics that I definitely find fascinating, and we're happy to have him with us tonight. Reverend Michael Carter, welcome, sir, to Speaking of Strange.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad we could do this.
Absolutely. I am, too. We wanted to have you on for a while, and my travel schedule's just been insane, and I know how busy you are.
I'm really busy.
So, what a story you have to tell. And I've had the privilege of reading some of your book, and this all began very early on for you, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It's very interesting, and you know, who was it? Kierkegaard said that life is lived forward, but it's really understood backwards. And I had found out later in life that my mom had had these experiences. She never talks about them. And that this happens in generations. But in December of 1989, when I had gone to Mexico to see the pyramids in Tulum and Chichen Itza, this time I was living in New York City, I had come back from my trip and hung out with some friends, you know, nothing extravagant. It was good to, it was a shock to get back to New York because it was in December. It was freezing and coming from 85, 90 degrees in Mexico. And that's when I had my first experience, waking up. And I talk about it in the book. And you want to talk about being frightened. I got up and my room was lit up like Times Square. And I tried to wake up my wife at the time, and she would not move. And there was a being on the edge of my bed. The typical, I would say stereotypical, with the egg-shaped head, the Ray-Ban eyes, tight-fitting jumpsuit, if you will, looked like aluminum foil. And I did what any other red-blooded American man would do. I pulled the covers up over my head and hoped it would go away.
Right.
And I, you know, I had this sensation that all of a sudden I felt like I was outside. It was freezing, and I closed my eyes, and I opened my eyes. I was back in my room. No, it was like nothing ever happened. And what had happened? Of course, I went to a psychiatrist. Obviously, I was losing my grip on reality, and this psychiatrist was very enlightened. He said, "Well, it could be good news and bad news. The good news is that you are mentally sane. You're not crazy." But the other news is that I wasn't there with you, but I must say that, from you, this is true. This has happened to you. And I don't know what to tell you to do about it. But this is all I can tell you. And from then on, her name was Dr. Jean Mundy. She's now deceased. Found her in a book, called Encounters by Dr. Edith Fiore. In the back of the book, it had a list of mental health professionals for people who had had these experiences or thought they were having these experiences. And that's what got me started on this journey.
So now you have had multiple experiences throughout your life.
Yes, I had them. Initially, I was starting to have them every full and new moon, 1989 into 1990. Scared to death, but nothing. I'm still here. I was shown pictures in my head, more like a telepathy kind of communication. And I started to miss them, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I knew they were coming and I would be frightened out of my gourd, but there was something, there was some transformation going on. And so what I did was I read everything I could, because I was always into religion, comparative religion studies, but I read everything I could about this. Now, I had friends, I went to a support group, I mentioned that in the book, and people from all walks of life, you know, black, white, brown, gay, straight, rich, poor, were having these experiences, but many of them were interested in propulsion systems. How do they fly? Are they coming from the earth or from other dimensions or what have you? My interest was, how do they affect us spiritually? Are our religious beliefs originating from maybe ancestors seeing these beings? And so I started reading everything I could and finding out that every culture has these stories of beings coming down from the sky. And I said, well, I'm onto something here. And of course, this is not novel. Dr. Barry Downing, who's a friend and colleague of mine, wrote a book back in 1968. He's not an experiencer, but he's a Rhodes Scholar. He's a retired Presbyterian minister, wrote a book, UFOs in the Bible, and flying, UFOs in the Bible, 1968. Of course, Morris K. Jessup, UFOs in the Bible, back in the 1950s, died a mysterious death. So knowing that other people were writing about this, knowing that other clergy at that time, not many, were interested in this topic, gave me the courage to say, hey, let me delve into this a bit more.
Well, you see, I am fascinated by the idea that so many cultures, as you said, throughout history have talked about contact with greater beings, but so many of them in the modern age are resistant to connecting them with what others describe as the extraterrestrial phenomenon, and yet the similarities there are obvious and striking.
They really are. They really are. I mean, ancient aliens. Now, when I first started talking about this back in New York, when I was lecturing about this, I never mentioned my own contact experiences because I would have been laughed out of the room, perhaps. Maybe not, but I just didn't do it. And here, 15, 20 years later, we can talk about it on TV, that this interest has grown. And I always found it really interesting that our government had top secret files on something they said didn't exist. I always thought that was intriguing. But when I started looking at the biblical stories, you know, and of course, reading about other cultures, Richard Thompson has a wonderful book called Alien Identities, talking about these machines called Vimanas, flying machines. This is the translation from the Hindi. Just finished a book last week called UFOs in the Quran, written by Abdul Aziz Khan. I mean, people are coming out and talking about these things. And so, of course, we have Native American lore talking about the star people. I have Cherokee background as well and lineage in my family. And, of course, there are the stories about us coming from the Pleiades. But there's something about these stories that are universal. And to me, I just want to be clear here, I believe the Bible is a book of many things. I mean, and so I don't want to disrespect and alienate people. The Bible contains much wisdom. These are stories written by our ancestors. And so I take the Bible very seriously. But I also say, in addition to that, I believe that these stories are talking to us about alien contact. Am I saying that God if there is a God, am I saying God is an extraterrestrial? No, I'm not. But I am saying that the deity that we know as Yahweh, to me, sounds more like he's just a little bit too human for my taste, if you will. He has anger management problems. He wants to drown the whole planet, start all over again. He has these temper tantrums. He's very concerned with sexuality in the sense, everybody has to be circumcised. And if you go through some of the stories, whether it's Jesus, whether it's John the Baptist, whether it's Abraham and Sarah, whether it's Samson, all of these stories all have one similarity. Yes, they're in the Bible, but an angel comes, and women that are barren, all except Mary, Jesus' mother, Miriam, Mary in Greek, Miriam in Hebrew, you know, but all these other folk, they're barren. These women are beyond the age of childbirth. And if you're an angel back then, meaning messenger, angels didn't have wings. When you see them with wings, our ancestors were just trying to tell us that these beings flew. I mean, it's a great job being an angel back there, whether you're Gabriel or whoever, because every time Gabriel visits a woman, she winds up pregnant.
Hmm. Yeah, well, you know, that's an excellent point, because it shows this extreme concern with merging their DNA with us. And, of course, you look at humans, and we are absolutely outstanding in terms of every other animal, so to speak, on this planet.
Yes.
We're about a minute from our first break. So how open do you find that people are becoming to this connection that you're making?
I think it's fantastic. I think people are very open. That's why you have shows like Ancient Aliens. That's why you have more shows on, whether it's the Sci-Fi Channel or this. I mean, people are talking about it, and I believe that that there's going to be a sighting. There's going to be something that the government can't explain away. So, you know, yes, we still have the xenophobic falling skies, and you have these TV shows and movies where the aliens are really mean people and they've come to destroy us, which is what we do. We'll make them the other. They're bad. They're from the devil, what have you. But in some way, it's the government's way, I think, of saying they're going to find out about this sooner or later.
All right. Well, when we come back, we will continue talking about that particular message. I'm talking this hour with a reverend. His name is Michael J.S. Carter. His website is MichaelJSCarter.com, and he has a new book, Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials, and the Holy Bible, something we should all think about. I'm Joshua P. Warren. We'll continue talking with Michael Carter on Speaking of Strange right after this. Imagine waking up in the middle of the night as an adult in your bedroom to find it flooded with light. And there, in the midst of the beams, is an extraterrestrial. We're talking about the big head, the big black eyes, the skin-tight metallic suit. And you realize at that point, calling 911 is not going to help you. You're on your own. You are isolated with something that is somehow more powerful than you. How do you feel at that moment? What do you do? And imagine if you're a person who already is spiritual. You already understand there are things greater than humans. That's exactly the situation that Michael J.S. Carter found himself in when he woke up at night to find what we might call an alien standing in his room. And he lives here in Asheville now. This life-altering experience and similar ones, they are what led him to write this new book, Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. And Reverend Michael J.S. Carter, what do you think, having had these experiences, having studied what you've studied, what do you think the message is? How do humans fit into this greater scheme?
That's a great question. I want to speak, I'm speaking for my own personal experiences. When I was in my support group in New York, there were people there who had had terrifying experiences. What we mostly hear about, they recall being abducted, ovum taking if they're women, sperm taking if they're guys, just terrifying, needles being handled roughly. And I empathize with that. That's a reality that is real, and I don't want to violate anybody's belief system. For me, to answer your question, I did not have those experiences, at least that I don't recall, and I've been through many hypnosis sessions. For me, I feel that, yes, there are rogue elements of extraterrestrials, that just as there are rogue elements of human beings. But for me, I just, not that I had it anyway, but I just felt more of a cosmic sense. It was more than just becoming an American or, you know, a very nationalistic perspective, which I did not have, but I saw myself more deeply connected with everything around me. I mean, and I'm not saying you have to have these experiences to learn to love. Certainly not. But it deepened my awareness of what love is and how that truly what happens to my brother or sister or to this planet affects me. I did not have that consciousness before. I was just the day-to-day trying to get by, trying to work, the mundane of life. Yes, I was in seminary and what have you. But these experiences deepened this interconnectedness. It's a cliche term. And so I had a whole different way of looking at life and my place in it. That in some ways I was, you know, a child of God, if you want to use those words, a child of the universe, that there was a spark of something sacred in me. But on the other hand, it made me realize that I'm just a speck of dust, and my life will be, even if I live to be 120, it will be like lightning going across the sky. And so how do I deal with both of those? With both of those realities, what do I do with my life between 8 and 85 now? And I just try to learn to love. I try to be more forgiving. Do I fall down? Yes, I'm a human being. But there's a majesty in that. I don't want to over-romanticize it, but there's also being aware of one's shortcomings. And so all of us are on the hero's journey, or the Shiro's journey, and we're trying to do the best we can when we get up in the morning and encounter who we encounter and what we encounter every day. My experiences opened me up to that in a whole new way. That's beyond religion.
Well, now, the King James Version of the Bible, which most people in our country adhere to...
Yeah, worst translation you can have, but you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, it does have all kinds of references to weird beings. Call them angels, call them demons.
Yeah.
You know, the book starts out with a talking snake. How do we retranslate this, so to speak, in the modern mindset with an understanding of the cosmos? What are some scriptures and whatnot that kind of give us a way of looking at this with fresh eyes?
Great question. Okay, let's look at, for instance, if we look in the book of Exodus, okay, now this is not going to speak, I'll give you some scripture passages that will speak directly to that, but just to give you some things of the inconsistencies of this book, as powerful as it is. In the book of Exodus, chapter 33, verse 11, we have a passage that says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend." That's chapter 33, verse 11. But chapter 33, verse 20, we are told, you cannot see my face, for no man can see me and live. Well, which is it? Did Moses speak face to face to God as a man talks to a friend, or did he not? And so this is not to downgrade or to denigrate, but it is to say that this book was written by human beings translating best they could what they saw. Now, speaking more to your point, if we look at the book of Isaiah, chapter 40, verse 22, it says, "It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers." Now, I remember asking my Old Testament professor in seminary, how did Isaiah know, or whoever wrote this, that the world was a sphere? See, I was told that people didn't know the world was round until Columbus came along. But here we have someone saying, "It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers." So one wants to ask, where are you getting this information? How do you know the earth is round? And no one can give really an answer to that. Now, I'm going to jump around, but let us go to Judges. We talked about Samson, you know, because all these people are special. They're all men, obviously, but there's Jesus, there's Samson who has superhuman strength, Jesus has been called a divinity, we have John the Baptist who is the precursor to Jesus. I mean, all these men, because if your mom is human and your dad isn't, then you're not human.
Right.
You see, but let's go to, Samuel, the book of Samuel, chapter 5. "The hand of the Lord lay heavy upon the Ashdodites, and he wrought havoc among them. He struck Ashdod and its territory with hemorrhoids. When the men of Ashdod saw how matters stood, they said, 'The ark of the God of Israel must not remain with us, for his hand has dealt harshly with us and with our God, Dagon.'" Now, what kind of deity is going to get so angry with you? I guess there were things you can do, but he gives them hemorrhoids. And this is right here in the Bible. I'm not making this up.
That's amazing.
And so I look at Yahweh as an E.T. I think that he is an extraterrestrial. I think that he is dealing with this tribe who he's terrorized in some ways, but he's also helped save them from certain things. I mean, they escaped from the land of Egypt. A pillar of cloud by day, pillar of fire by night. This is what the Exodus tells us. So we know that whether you want to say it's a spaceship or not, we have to say that it's unidentified and flying. It hovers, it leads them through the land of Egypt, I mean into the wilderness, and it stops and hovers while they camp out, sends them food, they call manna, but sends them something down from this ship. If we look at the birth of Jesus, we know that stars do not fly over mangers and shine lights down on them. If they did, the whole gravitational pull of the earth, you want to talk about tsunamis and earthquakes, the whole gravitational pull of the earth is disrupted. But here we have this extraterrestrial intelligence leading the wise men from the east, shining a light over a manger. We know stars don't do that. So it just primes the pump of the imagination.
Yeah, I mean, these are all absolutely perfect points. And, in fact, in about a minute, we'll take our next break here. But I'm wondering, when you look at all this, and we'll save your bigger explanation until we come back, but sure. When you look at all this, do you see a pattern that gives us some hint of what the overall agenda is? I tell you what, let's just hold it right there, and then, you know, we'll dig into that in a moment.
Okay.
I'm talking right now with Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. His website is michaeljscarter.com. You will find it linked up at speakingofstrange.com. He lives here in Asheville, North Carolina. And it's one thing to read books and to look at all this intellectually and spiritually, but he has had the personal experiences with beings from beyond that gave him that extra level of confidence. This is just something he should devote his life to. His new book is called, simply enough, Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. I'm Joshua P. Warren. We'll talk to him more on Speaking of Strange after this. I know the word alien might be an oversimplification, but that's fine. We all know more or less what we're talking about. And whether they're interdimensional, from another planet, or all of the above, maybe it's all the same. I've always felt that these visitors are perhaps as diverse as we humans are. We consider some bad, we consider some good. Basically, if a particular alien or group of aliens have an agenda that happens to align with ours, we say, oh, they're good. We call them angels. If they have an agenda that doesn't, well, we say they're bad. Maybe we call them demons or something dark. Well, these are complicated issues, but if we place things to scale the same way that we humans sort of analyze each other and intelligent life, maybe that's one way of envisioning these communications. I'm talking this hour on Speaking of Strange with a minister, Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. He lives here in Asheville, North Carolina. He has a new book called Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. And Michael, given the fact that you have looked at all of these different piecemeal sources from various cultures around the world that have been retranslated, and yet you, I'm sure, have found some patterns here and there. What can you tell us about your interpretation of the most likely overall agenda for these beings related to us?
I think that the patterns that I see are that we as human beings will, A, have to come to grips that we are not at the top of the food chain, that we are not alone, that there are beings out there who are spiritually and technologically light years ahead of us, that we need to grow up as a species, and as you were talking about the polarities that we think in terms of it's either good or bad, and we're taught to think like that. I mean, we live in a culture that confuses information with wisdom. So in some ways, it's no wonder that we think this way, but that the stakes are much higher. And that more and more people are coming, whether they're in the military or they're talking about these UFO sightings over military installations, especially over our nuclear installations. Let's face it, if we were going to be invaded, I mean, we would have been invaded a long time ago. If Earth was really in danger. But, you know, if you read UFOs and Nukes by Robert Hastings, and these veterans and these military folk are coming along and they're talking about these things, and first thing they're probably saying is, what kind of renegade backwater planet is this that these people can't get over solving their problems in ways other than violence? If you read the literature and you do some research, you'll see that, yes, there's always been sightings in the history of humankind, but the sightings in our generation escalated after we split the atom, after we bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, who, yes, there are people who call it revisionist history. Of course, it shortened the wars, I'm told. But we dropped the bombs on civilian populations. Okay, now you want to talk about terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I think is going on, not with all, because there's some who probably don't mean us or bear us no great love, but there are some who are trying to say to us, listen, it's time to grow up. It's time to realize that there are other ways to solve problems. It's time to realize that you have more technology than you know what to do with, and you're going to destroy yourself and your planet. And to look at these stories, I mean, I'm reading now Jeremiah chapter 13. Just want to get this in here. And this is God. And God is saying, I will smash them one against the other, parents and children alike, declares the Lord. No pity, compassion, or mercy will stop me from destroying them. This is in Jeremiah chapter 13, verse 14. But we don't challenge that. We will say, oh, you know, we'll make up some way we can rationalize that. But what kind of loving God would do this? And so I'm saying, let's look at these things in a different way. I wish I could give you a less convoluted answer. I don't know. I'm like Socrates. The more I know I don't know, the wiser I become. But the pattern I see is that we are children of the stars, that our origins, most likely, we were at least seeded by some of these beings, and that it's time to come of age, because we're going to destroy ourselves.
Well, you know, the stories in the Bible are guided by these individuals who are chosen for some mysterious reason to be liaisons between humans and the greater beings. Whether it is, you know, Moses or Abraham, or, you know, you go down the list, do you think that there are individuals who live on this planet, maybe they are in government, maybe they're not, who are fulfilling those roles today?
I think there are, but they may not even be extraterrestrial. Maybe they've had experiences, but I think that there are people out here who are very human. Some of them may make the news, some of them don't. But they're trying to get us as a species to look at a different way. The old order is passing away. That's the only way I can say it. We're at the crisis point with our planet. This climate change is very real. Even when you have people, the Occupy Wall Street, movement that was going on for a while, whether one agreed with it or not, we couldn't have that conversation even 10 years ago, talking about class, talking about why 1% of our country owns all this wealth. When Romney's running for president, and at the beginning of his campaign, we had conversations about, were any of these candidates, but about how women were being treated. We couldn't have that conversation. The consciousness is changing. Things that we never talked about before are coming out into the open. And we have to have the spiritual maturity, whether it's coming from extraterrestrials or gods or what have you, that we have some issues here that are pressing. And the old way of doing things is simply not working. I think that we look for the dramatic. We want to see the burning bush. We want to see the heavens part. But there are people out here every day getting up, going to work like you and me, and are trying to live their own sense of spirituality. And that's what this is about. There are no gods from space coming to save us. There's no God coming to, we're reaping what we sow, but we have to learn to love. We have to learn to forgive. We have to learn to live together. I mean, there's just no other way of doing it. What we've done thus far is simply not working. And science is not going to pull a rabbit out of its hat at the 11th hour.
You know, I read somewhere recently that Buddha said all spirituality is about relieving suffering. And if, in fact, that is true, how close are we? How close are we to being a spiritual world?
I think that we are, more so than what the media would let us know. But I also know that we're still being told that if I use this toothpaste or this mouthwash, I'll get laid. If I have enough money, he or she who has the most toys wins. We have all, the other day I bought a pair of jeans. I haven't bought a pair of jeans in, about 15 years. And I, easy fit, loose fit, tight fit, bell bottom, whatever. I got 25 different jeans I could buy. But for a political candidate, I only get two choices. There's something wrong with that. And so, you know, it's we get all this information, but where's the wisdom? That's the question. And we think that we're, if we're successful, that we're wise. So in some ways, we are a deluded, immature species, in general speaking. I don't want to paint a broad brush, but there are people among us, and no, it's not always the Dalai Lama or Bishop Tutu or Dr. King. Yes, these people are icons and what have you, but it's the everyday person getting up, going to work, trying to be a little better today than they were yesterday. Is that going to make the news? No, but this is what makes the world turn. The African-American prolific writer James Baldwin was quoted as saying that the world turns by the love of a very few people. And I believe that. If I didn't believe it, I wouldn't get up in the morning.
We have a couple of minutes before our next break. You know, when I walk into the woods, I'm not necessarily out there looking for a particular squirrel or a particular bird. I just, if I happen upon one, you know, fine. Yeah. Do you think that's why that you were initially visited by the extraterrestrials, or was there a deeper organization there?
Well, when I did the research, I found out that it comes in generations. So my mom had been visited, but she wouldn't talk about it. So there's a lineage there. If you want to get metaphysical, I've had some friends who are very, very gifted psychics, and they said, well, Michael, you've done this before. This is not the first time. In other lifetimes, you've been in contact with these folks. I happen to believe that there's a familiarity, after you get over the initial shock, and that your heart may burst from fear. So I don't think I'm special in any way. No, not at all, because other people have these experiences. They're just not talking about them. But I do think that they deepened my insight into what it means to be a human being.
Okay.
And how connected we all really are.
Well, we will take a break, and when we come back, we'll have just a few more minutes to wrap up tonight's conversation with Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Of course, next hour will be the Dark 30 hour, when we dig into the more outrageous and controversial and crazy stuff that's been happening in the media lately. Let me also remind you, go to Michael's website, MichaelJSCarter.com, to learn more about his new book, Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. You can purchase the Kindle book on Amazon or the Nook book at Barnes and Noble. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual, where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, keeping you company. Thanks for spending your evening with us. This is Speaking of Strange. The book is called Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. It explores the thesis the Bible is a book about humankind and its contact with beings from other worlds and what that would mean for monotheistic religions on our planet. Were the early Jews and Christians describing contacts with extraterrestrial beings? I think so, personally. And so does Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. His website is michaeljscarter.com. It's linked up at speakingofstrange.com. And we're in the final minutes of hour number two before we move on to the dark 30 hour. As I often say, it's the show that explores the summit of man's enlightenment and the pit of his depravity, and nothing makes that clearer than tonight's program. That said, Michael, in the few remaining minutes, I'll just turn the mic over to you and tell us what's next, what is most important for us to understand, and how can people learn more about you and your work?
Well, thanks, Josh. I mean, please go to the website. You can also email me, and we can, I answer all my emails. I answer my calls. It's amazing. There was someone who saw me on Ancient Aliens yesterday. He's from Atlanta. He's in Asheville this weekend, and he gave me a call, and we're going to get together, I think, Friday and have lunch and talk. I'm open to doing that. I just want to stress a couple of things. The first thing is this. When we talk about this reality, to be sure that we realize that we don't paint everybody with a broad brush. I have had the experience of seeing more than one race or species of extraterrestrials. I've seen reptilian beings, and I saw, people call them grays, but there are many different species of grays. Well, see, we do this, we stereotype, and we do this. And so people will say, what do the aliens want? Well, what aliens are you talking about? Who can possibly answer that? You can talk about one's own personal experience. But that's all we can really talk about. So I want to make that clear. And I also want to say, the Bible is many things. I mean, the Bible can be used. It was used to justify slavery. It was used to justify homophobia. It's been used to justify anything that we want, because we can read it in any way that we want. We can interpret. I still say that the Bible is an important book. For some of us, it is a book that undergirds our faith. But like any other document, we can also see layers, and to try to be open-minded. Whether you agree with me or not is not the point, because I'm not trying to take away faith. I had to ask myself this when I was writing the book. Are you taking away faith? No. I feel that I'm just putting a hypothesis out there that is worth exploring. We're reminded the unexamined life is not worth living.
Well, you know, I agree with you, Michael. And I, over the years I've done this program and another research, I've talked to a lot of people who have made a very strong, clear case for the fact that we have to stop and re-examine once in a while who we are.
Yeah.
and look at everything that put us here from a new perspective.
Yes.
And, it does not mean to believe that many of these encounters described in the Bible are alien encounters. It does not mean that there is no God. It means these are separate phenomena.
Yes.
And we can only benefit from learning how to, I guess, separate those two and figure out in realistic terms what that may mean for our future interactions. So I wish you the best of luck, and since we're here in the same town, I'm sure we'll be doing lunch or dinner or something.
Definitely,
like that
please.
As well. I hope everybody goes and checks out your book, and hey, great work, and I thank you so much for being on the program tonight.
Thank you, Josh, and let's get together and have lunch and talk. I'd love to.
Okay, there you go, folks. That was Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Again, his website, michaeljscarter.com. You'll find that it's linked up at speakingofstrange.com. And I have read, I haven't read all of his book. I've read quite a bit, and I really like this book. And the cool thing is that, you know, you don't have to go and order it and wait for it to be shipped to you. He's with the current times, the technology. You can purchase it again as a Kindle book on Amazon or a Nook book at Barnes & Noble. I've got a Kindle. I love the thing. With all my traveling, I watch movies and, you know, read books. And the thing that sucks is that the airports, you know, they won't let you turn your Kindle on until you're in the air, and you got to turn it off before you land. I still think it's a hoax, Forrest. There's no reason that we have to turn off all of our electronic stuff.
Oh, Josh, that's going to mess with our sensitive instruments.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, they just basically just are so lazy they don't want to filter through what might and might not mess with their airline technology, so they just say, "Ah, turn everything off."
Yeah, words with friends will really mess things up.
I heard the Alec Baldwin punched a guy, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I heard that.
Like yesterday. Paparazzi guy. So anyway, when we come back, it will be the Dark 30 hour, and we know what that means. It's the hour when we dig into the stuff that's more outrageous, more controversial, not for the easily offended, not for the kiddies. Some people tune in just for the Dark 30 hour. Some people just turn off the radio, and you determine where you fall in that, because when we come back, we will dig straight into it. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual. Speaking of strange.
Letters on the